and I think maybe to most fans, just like you're being dragged along unwillingly to this conclusion where Jerry Jones does the thing where he uses this supposed drama to talk about how actually drama is really good. I'm good at this. And then does the seemingly inevitable, which is pay Micah Parsons top dollar, and then we can all say, well, you could have got him a lot cheaper a year ago or whatever. But instead, he really is being traded to Green Bay. And there is a contract in place, 4 years, $188 million, up to, it's going to have to be. I looked three times to see if it really said Adam Schefter. Schefter did unfortunately call Parsons Micah Packers. And there's the jersey right there. He's, of course, wearing Green Bay jersey. We can't not have that in the world. We've got to actually pretend that he's already played a game for the Packers. Micah Packers. Rappaport called him Micah Parsons. Once I saw that, I knew it had to be right, because you get one fake insider at a time. When there's big news, they all have it simultaneously. So there it is. Chris Trapasso on the Wester Hotline. Can you believe it?
I cannot. I mean, how you just set this scene, that's exactly what I thought was going to happen. I thought there was from Lindsay Rhodes, who's part of Sumer Sports now, used to be on NFL Network, she tweeted last night that she thought, oh, this is going to be Jerry Jones signing Micah Parsons on the day of the Eagles game to take some of the shine away from the Eagles getting that first game of the regular season after winning the Super Bowl. That's what seemed most likely. They signed Dak Prescott right before the season. They signed CeeDee Lamb same way. Trevon Diggs a couple years ago as well. So this was one that seemed maybe the most obvious that they should have re-signed this player, and they ultimately didn't. We still don't know what the trade compensation, and we'll probably get that during this interview. It's probably going to be a doozy. It's probably going to be multiple firsts and then some. But you're right. I thought this was going to just be, yeah, all right, they're going to ultimately sign, and why were we so concerned? But now we have a huge power shift, I think, in the NFC.
Everything like this that happens, or not like this, but just like moves, I'll end up coming to the realization or making the point that, well, this isn't going to move the betting markets. This will. I mean, this will move the betting markets. This will work for Green Bay. And I don't know, Chris, Dallas had some shine to it with Prescott and George Pickens being there now. And maybe, again, the assumption that Parsons would get done. But damn, I mean, now he's gone. Maybe they'll get a player back in this. We don't know yet, like you said.
Oh, that's true.
Still, though, I mean, they open the season in Philadelphia next week. And his absence will be maybe the biggest talking point of the night.
Absolutely. I mean, there is a strong case. I know it's the Cowboys and the playoff failures that are always going to stick out more than anything else with that organization. But there's a case that, like, Micah Parsons, the last 4 years since he's been in the NFL, has been, like, the most consistent three-down outside pass rusher in the NFL. I don't think it's slam dunk that he's definitely better than Myles Garrett or T.J. Watt, but he is absolutely in that conversation. He's dealt with some nagging injuries here and there, but he's mostly been very durable. He's awesome against the run, and he's just prolifically efficient as a pass rusher. So they lose DeMarcus Lawrence, who was kind of on his way down, but still a quality player, and Micah Parsons from their pass rush. I don't really know who's getting after the passer in Dallas on what has not been that good of a defense over the last couple of years.
What about Green Bay in this then? I mean, for now, we don't know if they're giving up any players, and are there any players that really would move the needle here? Ian Rappaport says at least two firsts are going to the Cowboys in this trade.
Wow.
What's your analysis of the Packers, the effect on Green Bay?
This is such a big need for them that this defense in Green Bay has kind of held it together the last couple of years, but it's really been Rashawn Gary, who's kind of like a sneaky elite outside pass rusher, and no one else. They drafted Lucas Van Ness out of Iowa a few years ago. He's kind of like, I mean, to use a Bills comparison, he's kind of like an A.J. Epenesa type, that he was an oversized edge rusher or an undersized defensive tackle, and he really has not played up to that first-round status. He's kind of okay on the inside, but not great as an edge rusher. So they desperately have needed someone else to buoy that pass rush outside of Rashawn Gary. The secondary has not really been that great because I think the lack of a pass rush. They lose Jaire Alexander to the Ravens. So I think that was a huge need and is obviously probably why the Packers were willing to send multiple firsts and then some and then still pay 26-year-old Micah Parsons this huge contract. So it definitely, for a team that has so many young pieces, has been to the playoffs in multiple seasons, 2 years ago, very close to the NFC title game. Last year, not quite as good after the Jordan Love injury. But yes, this definitely moves the needle for, I still think, one of the best contenders in the NFC.
I was just talking earlier today about the Packers and thinking about their offense and their style of offense. Like, it's pretty conservative. And like, come on, Green Bay. Like, get in it to win it. You've got Love exactly. here. You're paying him. Like, come on, let's just pick the pace up a little bit. They don't do it this. They don't do it my way or the way I was thinking earlier, but they do it in this more shocking and awesome way. Two quick points. Reportedly, money-wise, Chris, he comes in well above Myles Garrett in every category. So he wins. And also, week four, Sunday night, is Green Bay at Dallas.
Wow, that's going to set ratings records. The Cowboys, even when the Cowboys are not good, they're kind of like that entity where when they're bad, people want to see them struggle, and then when they are kind of good, they're kind of that hated team out, you know, if you're not in the Dallas area, and they have a huge fan base nationwide. That one, so it doesn't matter. Like, Cowboys games draw, like, that's why all those years, it was always week one, Sunday Night Football seemed like it was Cowboys-Eagles or Cowboys-Giants, just because the ratings were a guarantee. That one, especially with the Packers organization and this trade, will probably be up there with, like, Bills-Chiefs last season, if not higher, in terms of just overall nationwide ratings.
You know, I was talking to Sal yesterday, and Ravens-Bills ought to do pretty well. NBC sent out all kinds of stats about their history, Sunday Night Football, and the second highest game they've ever had in their series is last year's opener, Baltimore-Kansas City. I would think, and the Ravens and the Bills thing is pretty well established at this point, and they have such common narratives, obviously, with what's happened in the last 5 years in the AFC, but the intrigue of the two quarterbacks and the two contenders that they are, I think it's a great opening night or Sunday night for week one.
It's perfect. I mean, like I was just saying, that like that Sunday night in week one, I mean, there's so many marquee games now, and there's the Brazil game, all that. But that used to be like kind of the marquee game before they started to do the, you know, the Super Bowl champion getting to host that Thursday game to start the season. And I think you can also obviously throw in the fact of like how much of a surprise it was for Josh Allen to win the MVP after Lamar Jackson was the first team All-Pro quarterback, and Josh Allen was second team. So yeah, like I think that game will be up there with that Packers Cowboys in terms of like most highest rated game or highest rated games. Whether you're looking at CBS, NBC, whatever it is, there's so many networks today. That one will, I don't know if it'll break records, but it will be a contender because there's just so many great storylines for two teams that have been as good on a, you know, 7 to 8 year basis as every team in the AFC outside of the Chiefs.
Well, Chris, of course, we talked a lot pre-draft, as we have done for a few years here, about, you know, not only just possibilities for the Bills at their pick, but many of the top rookies. I'll just ask this in a broad sense, and you can take it where you want. As the season is about to start, and, you know, you and I, and for different reasons, are monitoring all the rookies, at least in my case, the skill position guys, how did we do? I do want to let you run with that, but I'll just give you one thought that I have, you know, in fantasy context at least, is I think we might get paid off on the running backs this year. All the running backs we liked that, you know, many went into day three, but it seems like there's some real potential for several of the rookie running backs to hit.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to say specifically this early, but I think you're right. I mean, I was even watching, I don't know why I was watching this, but like the last Bengals preseason game with Taj Brooks looks like someone that could ultimately be like him and Chase Brown can be these sixth rounders that, again, that we talked about at pre-draft that, like, you know, we're in this running back renaissance, Derrick Henry, Saquon Barkley, but I still think what the Bengals are doing offensively to not pay running backs and just draft high-quality athletes that were productive in college in the fifth and sixth round could ultimately pay off. Bashaul Tuten, I think, is going to be a lot of fun in Jacksonville, and it'll be sooner rather than later, which would be just poetic justice for me that literally owns a shirt that says, do not draft running backs in the first round, that he overtakes Travis Etienne and is ultimately him and Tank Bigsby are the two guys there in Jacksonville that are really shouldering the load in that backfield. So if you want to like run through any of the other wide receivers or tight ends or running backs that like instantly come to mind, we can talk about them. But I think those two just popped into my head that I think had really good apparently training camps and into the preseason.
Another of the bigger names among those types would be Ja'Cory Crosby-Merritt in Washington.
Forgot about him.
May end up being their starter. They still have Austin Ekeler. They'll use Chris Rodriguez, but he's somebody that maybe the last time we talked it was, which was after the draft, his name came up.
Yeah, I mean, he's someone that is such an interesting case because he was insanely productive 2 years ago at New Mexico, transfers to Arizona, and was like ruled ineligible for some weird sanction, like not academically, not because he did something off the field, something with like the number that he was wearing. I don't know. I've seen different things, but pre-draft, I mean, to jump 41 and a half inches to be NFL caliber size, and in the one game that he played at Arizona last year, he averaged over 8 yards per carry. So he looked, from his New Mexico film to his one game at Arizona and the pre-draft workout, like someone that you should probably draft in the fourth or the fifth round if we're just, again, pushing down the value at running back. Washington gets him in the seventh, and I'll say hats off to their relatively new GM, Adam Peters, for like not going into a summer even and really worrying about when a guy was picked. And, hey, you know, Brian Robinson, yes, past regime, that probably didn't help him. It was probably part of the reason that he was traded to San Francisco. But Ja'Cory Crosby-Merritt apparently just looked the part right away, even though he was a seventh rounder. So he's someone that I'm sure you've drafted already and will be one of those late-round fantasy running backs that I think will pay off for a lot of people out there, where maybe this is the year. I mean, I don't have anything personally against running backs, but maybe this could be the year where rookies, second-year, even third-year guys, we start to see, like the Tyrone Tracys and the Chase Browns of the world, that you truly can get quality players. Maybe Ray Davis is one of these guys as a former day three pick, that you can, if you have a good offensive line and a good offensive play caller, you can get quality production from that position without paying them enormous amounts of money.
Did you watch Ashton Jeanty at all? Like the first game, he might have gone like 3 for -1. Yeah. And people were joking about that. But I saw a couple of nice runs from him against the Niners in what would have been, I think, their second game. How does it sound for you with Jeanty and the Raiders so far?
Yeah, I think the third game, too, was similar to the first. Like, there was no holes. Okay. Like, when he was on the field, they were clear run blitzes. And he was either had minus yards or barely had any. But it was more so just because of the lack of holes. The one thing, I mean, yes, against the 49ers, he looked like Ashton Jeanty that we saw the last two seasons at Boise State. The one thing that in watching, and I think this was kind of out there on Twitter as well, it's not just from me, like he looked like running angrier than normal, like he was seeking out contact. And he's small, like he's 5'8", 5'9", certainly very chiseled, has a low center of gravity, over 200 pounds. But he can't take a beating like that, like he's Derrick Henry and he's 6'3", 250. So that was just the one minor concern. I mean, I absolutely loved him as a prospect. I thought he was, you know, had the best contact balance of any running back that I've ever scouted. But I'm just hoping, for the sake of probably your fantasy teams or other fantasy teams out there and Jeanty himself, that he quickly learns, like, when he sees a linebacker, he should try to use his speed and his agility before just trying to run those players over in the NFL.
Good point. The latest report on this Micah Parsons trade, Parsons to Green Bay, really, and just a record-breaking contract, tons of guaranteed money. Dallas gets two firsts and defensive lineman Kenny Clark, who is 29. Ooh. You have an opinion of him? I don't. People don't seem to like it.
He is one of the better nose tackles in the NFL. But I think that kind of speaks to the value of that position, that he's been good for a long time. Are you getting 50, 60, 70 pressures and 8 to 12 sacks out of him? I mean, maybe he's reached some of those plateaus at some point in his career, but at 29, I don't know if that's necessarily the case. And it's even an indictment. I'm just thinking about the draft right away. In getting him back to Dallas in the trade, It's an indictment on the Cowboys missing on Mozzie Smith in the same draft where the Bills picked Dalton Kincaid. Remember, that was kind of the thought that they really wanted Kincaid. The Bills leapfrogged them, and then they picked this Michigan nose tackle, Mozzie Smith, who's still on the team 2 years or 3 years later, but has really done absolutely nothing. He's not even a good run defender. So it's kind of like they're patching that draft miss by adding him to this trade. Overall, it's just very strange, but maybe on brand for Jerry Jones at this point.
Yeah. With Chris Trapasso here, Micah Parsons traded to the Packers. Well, you mentioned Kincaid. We want to get into some Bills topics here before we run out of time. Let's start with him and maybe get to Keon Coleman, too. Not this year's draft, but two young skill position players that, you know, kind of a lot rides on. I would say especially Coleman at this point. Mozzie Smith is still on the team in Dallas. Dalton Kincaid is still on the team here. But, I mean, how fair is that or unfair to compare?
I think more so than Keon Coleman, who we can talk about in a second. Dalton Kincaid, to me, just, I wasn't at training camp this year, but just following it, Hard Knocks, we've barely heard from him, seen him, minimal talk, when there's been a lot about Keon Coleman, that he's looked great preseason and the joint practice against Chicago. Not much from Coleman. I think he is the ultimate X factor on this offense. We're all obviously assuming that the Bills are still going to be one of the best offenses in the league, but I think there is a legitimate, justifiable question of, like, can they rekindle the 31 points a game and the 500-plus points and how efficient they were and moving the chains, not turning it over, just scoring a ton of points. Does Kincaid play any better than he did last season? Because they didn't really get much from him last season, and they still were able to do that. I think he can be, because he does have the talent, that tier below the elite-level tight ends in the NFL. And I think when he was on the field pre-injury last year, the Bills, you know, used him a lot. They wanted to target him a fair amount, even as a rookie. They, like, fast-tracked him into the offense, and he was garnering a lot of targets. He has the yards after the catch ability. He can separate, and I do think Josh Allen likes to see those guys open before firing it in there. Mm-hmm. So he's really interesting to me, because I don't know what the Bills are going to get, but if he takes that next step, it would be huge for the offense.
Of course. Are you optimistic for Coleman? I mean, Bulldog is in here to say it. He and many, I think, are expecting a big jump. I don't know if I should be.
I'm not going to say a huge jump, but I think the fact that he's just more determined, and he, I'm not saying that I don't want Keon Coleman to lose his personality and just be kind of the complete opposite of the player that we saw in that post-draft interview where he was hilarious. But I think going from year one to year two and understanding, like, I'm a professional, I need to take it a little bit more seriously and strengthen my weaknesses, I think we could see a little bit of a better season. I'm just, in general, I mean, maybe just the Josh Allen effect could be huge for him, like it's been for a lot of other receivers.
Yeah.
But I think in general, predicting that someone is just going to be this amazing contested catch receiver is usually kind of fickle to do that unless you're Mike Evans in general, that's very not sticky from year to year. So if that's where the Bills believe he's going to win, that Josh Allen, who's certainly not afraid to make a tight window throw, is going to just throw it up to him and he's going to win on 70 or 80% of his contested catches and he's going to be this Mike Evans type, I think that's very much wishful thinking. But it wouldn't surprise me, now that he's 22, like we were seeing before the injury, if there are times where he makes some plays and he is somewhat of a red zone threat on a team that wants to spread the football around.
As for this year's Bills draft, Chris, so not much to say about Maxwell Hairston. He'll miss the first 4 weeks. He missed much of camp, the entire preseason. So that is incomplete at this point. I guess they all are. Is there a different Bills rookie that you're maybe most curious about, or somebody that's, your opinion might have moved a little bit since the draft?
I think Deion Walker is the obvious one, and I was trying to kind of rack my brain for anyone else. I mean, Jordan Hancock, you could say as well. I think he played well in the preseason, and I love, like, his legitimate versatility to play, like, four different spots in the secondary that's kind of banged up right now and there's a lot of question marks with. But I think Deion Walker, I mean, he played in the preseason and from all reports during camp, like that first rounder that a lot of us expected he could ultimately be after the 2023 season. I mean, at his size, with his nimble feet, first step quickness, it's like you think that he's just someone that's going to eat blocks and, oh man, you got to double team him. You can't get the double teams to him because he can win through the gap so quickly. He really plays like he thinks he's Ed Oliver in terms of his size and his athleticism, but he's 6'7", 350. And even when he doesn't get home, we saw in the preseason, puts his arms up in the air and he can bat down passes at a, I think, relatively very high rate. So he's someone that I think the Bills were not sure what they were going to get. I mean, he's another one that's only 21 years old. He's very young, like one of the youngest players in the draft. And if they can get any bit, you know, 70, 80% or even 90% of what they saw in the preseason, that would go a very long way. And I think helping out the secondary to not have to cover as long, you know, when they're facing the Joe Burrows and the Lamar Jacksons and those high caliber quarterbacks that they have on the schedule.
Right. Last thing quickly to go back to the draft at large. It sounds to me like many of the rookie receivers are trending up from when they were drafted. Certainly Emeka Egbuka with Godwin hurt in Tampa. Tet McMillan sounds like that's going really well. They've traded Adam Thielen. Matthew Golden, good reviews in Green Bay. Burden in Chicago might not be first on the depth chart, but he did some things. I think as a group, maybe it's been a good summer for those guys, that position.
Yeah. It was kind of a sneaky good class. I mean, we kind of got, I mean, I feel like I probably talked about this pre-draft, that it wasn't a Jamar Chase draft, but I thought in general the class was pretty good, and there was a lot of relatively safe bets, guys who were productive over multiple seasons and tested well. Tet McMillan, back-to-back seasons at Arizona, super productive. Luther Burden, same thing at Missouri. Matthew Golden kind of came on late at Texas, but his separation skill kind of made it feel like he could acclimate pretty quickly. I think even Jack Besh, even though the Raiders have not traded Jacoby Myers, you know, that coming about maybe indicates that they feel good about Jack Besh, who I loved pre-draft, you know, mm-hmm. out of the slot. So it was, I think, a sneaky good wide receiver class, even though there wasn't that blue chip talent at the top.
And Dante Thornton made a little noise in
exactly.
Vegas as well. Thank you for this, Chris. What are you working on that you might want to promote or tell us about?
No, not much right now. Just Trapsheet at Substack.com. I kind of took most of the preseason off. Didn't want to draw too many conclusions from it. But once we get here now to the regular season, I'm going to be trying to cover the NFL in as unique of a way as possible at Trapsheet at Substack.com.
Very good. Thanks again for joining me.
Mike. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Mike.
All right. Chris Trapasso with us on the Wester Hotline. Micah Parsons traded to Green Bay. This was one where, I mean, I could have spent more time in here talking about the Bills, right? We don't need to talk about whether he was going to be traded to Green Bay. I mean, that's what happened. But could the Bills have ever done this? Two firsts and a guy, like an Oliver maybe, or even below that for this player. But the money is so historically massive that I don't think, you know, the Bills were ever in position to do that. I wonder if they tried to work it out. Huge trade. The Cowboys open the NFL season next Thursday night in Philadelphia. I'm going to go look. I bet this is moving lines. And by the way, quickly, earlier I had it in my mind, UB at Minnesota tonight, that the Bulls were like a 9-point underdog. Maybe I saw a first half line. I just saw it on the ticker up there. 17.5 is what Minnesota is favored by against UB, 8 o'clock on Fox Sports 1. Lines open for your reactions to this trade or other topics we've been into today and this week, 803-0550.